Have you ever heard this urban legend? A group of scientists placed 5 monkeys in a cage, and in the middle, a ladder with bananas on top. Every time a monkey went up the ladder, the scientists soaked the rest of the monkeys with cold water. After a while, every time a monkey would start to go up the ladder, the others would pull it down and beat it up. After a time, no monkeys would dare try climbing that ladder, no matter how great the temptation. The scientists decided then to replace one of the monkeys. The first thing this new monkey did was to try and climb that ladder, and immediately the other ones pulled him down. After several beatings, the new monkey learned never to go up that ladder, even though there was no evident reason not to, except for the other monkey's behavior. In turn, each of the original monkeys was replaced with a new monkey, and each new monkey was taught to stay away from the bananas. What was left was a group of 5 monkeys who had never received a cold shower of water, but they continued to prevent any monkey from climbing that ladder. If it was possible to ask the monkeys why they beat up all those other monkeys who attempted to climb the ladder, their most likely answer would be, "I don't know, it's just how things are done around here." Sounds a little familiar. At least that last line, not the monkeys. And as I found out, that story actually isn't really true. It is based on some research, but no monkeys were hurt in the telling of this story. But in family systems theory, we call that passing on of unexplained behavior like that homeostasis. Not only do systems want to keep the rules the same, like the monkeys in the story, if one part changes too much, then the other parts of the system adjust to bring everything back into balance, like a mobile. I saw this a lot when I worked in a shelter at Vera House for women and children who had been abused. The kids would be like great for the first 2 or 3 days until they realized, completely unconsciously, that the shelter was not chaotic. And then they would try to create chaos because that is what they knew. There is always resistance to change and to growth. We know that change is happening all the time. The Big Bang happened and our universe has never been the same from moment to moment since. We exist in the midst of this tension between constant, unstoppable change and a hardwired resistance to it. When we talk about resistance in that way, it seems like a bad thing, something that is counter to growth and life. But I think there is a place for this conservation, this desire for things not to change. After all, if you are a child in a family, it's really helpful to know that if you want extra ice cream, you go to the pushover parent. And if you want to make sure that you have money for the field trip, you go to the parent who always follows through on those details. Stability and predictability help us know who we are and what we can do. Think about the monkey story. What if some of the details were changed and the moral of the story changes completely? What if there was no hose with cold water? What if instead, the banana is poisonous and makes monkeys very ill if they eat it? The monkeys learn not to eat the banana. They'll try to keep other monkeys in their troop from eating the banana. They will pass this knowledge on to new monkeys brought into the cage as the old monkeys are slowly removed. Even after all the original monkeys are removed, the current monkeys are protected by the "we've always done it that way" mentality. But here, it is for protection and support. There are times when you don't want to risk, when it's not right to risk. There really are times when those bananas are not safe. So how do we tell the difference between a risk that is worth it, a cold shower whose reward is a wonderful banana, or a risk that is not worth it, a banana that will make us sick? I personally think that's where faith communities can help. But you all know that I am really biased in favor of faith communities. I admit that I am. It seems appropriate since I am the minister of this church. But I think that we UUs have a unique way of being a faith community. We don't tell each other how to be. We support one another in each of our searches. We are a little less likely to say, well, that's the way we've always done it. We do say it, but in my experience, not as often as some other churches. We try to affirm people, affirm them in their exploration and their growth, and we know that there is no growth without risk, and so we try to have each other's backs as we risk in this exploration of ours. Let's say that you want to explore your faith a little deeper by gathering a group that discusses the intersection of feminism and paganism. Nobody here is going to say, oh, well, we don't do that here. They will remind you to reserve a room and let the office know so it can go in the newsletter. See? Think of some other things that have happened here in the past year or so. We have First Friday music jams, Taze services, game nights, drumming circles, our Building Beloved Community Beyond the Binary conference, potlucks, Black Lives Matter discussion groups, the meditation group, climate change events, and letter writings to our representatives. All of these, and there are more, I am sure I have forgotten some. All of these happenings were ways in which folks in this congregation felt they could deepen their faith and their connection with one another. And we have folks in this congregation who are moved to show up outside of this congregation. We have people who show up at rallies and demonstrations, folks who work with the Eastern Farm Workers, folks who are starting to get interested in ACTS, the Alliance of Communities Transforming Syracuse. We have folks who are helping St. Lucie's Food Bank, people who are working with Interfaith Works around refugee issues and the travel ban. I believe it is true that community helps. We help each other get out and do these things that help the world beyond these walls. You would have thought I told Sunny what to say this morning as I read this next sentence. I think we do a good job of being both a safe place for folks to come and regroup, reconnect with themselves and others, take care of their souls, and being a place that encourages folks when they are ready and able to do what they can, where they can, when they can. It is not easy to be both inwardly focused and outwardly focused, but I think that we do that, and we do it pretty well. I began this sermon with a story about monkeys who passed on a lesson that did not promote growth, about monkeys that did not take a risk. Dr. Cornel West, in his book, Brother West, Living and Loving Out Loud, writes about a different kind of lesson passed on from his ancestors. He wrote, "The lessons taught by my elders, the same lesson, in fact, their elders taught them, was that love is the core of it all. The rest is just sounding brass and tinkling cymbal. To come from a people who were denigrated, enslaved and despised, and still place love in the center of life is to be part of a miracle. My conclusion became my calling, that justice is what love looks like in public, just as deep democracy is what justice looks like in practice. When you love people, you hate the fact that they're being treated unjustly. Justice is not simply an abstract concept to regulate institutions, but also a fire in the bones to promote the well-being of all. When love is at our core and not fear, then the risk to growth seems much less like a risk and much more like a natural course of events. And to be able to keep love at the center is a miracle, because you and I know that each and every day, in so many ways, we are told not to love, but to be afraid. We are told not to risk, but to conserve. We are told not to grow our welcome, but limit our welcome. And that is why I think our UU faith is important, because it gives us a different message. It affirms our dignity and asks us to affirm others. One of the reasons we chose the hymn, I Choose Love, is it was written after the shooting in Charleston. This person was moved to say, in the midst of pain, I choose love. It can sound kind of sweet and a little saccharine, but when you realize the context, that's a really powerful statement. And I think that that really is what we UUs do. From this perspective, the important question about risk and about life is not, are you willing to jump off, but are you willing to jump in? Not, are you willing to put yourself in danger, but are you willing to give yourself to something bigger? Not, will you be daring, but will you stay true? When we risk to jump in, there will be growth. There is no growth without risk. Think about a child learning to walk. If they were afraid of falling, they would never do it. And our bodies grow. We risk nutrients in order to grow. This congregation will not grow unless you risk some of your money. See, I was going to get stewardship in here somehow. We won't grow unless you risk some of your money, some of your commitment, some of your time, and mostly your heart. You have to risk your heart. It comes down to this: no risk, no growth. I thought maybe I could just do that for the whole sermon, just one sentence and then I'm done. But I decided perhaps you would like more. It is true for each of our bodies, no risk, no growth, and it's true for our congregation too. This is the Sunday we are kicking off our canvas, our pledge drive. So we will know, we take in our pledges so we know what we can spend next year. And the leadership of this congregation decided to take a couple of risks. We are having a very short pledge drive, 3 weeks. And there will be very little person-to-person contact. We won't be doing a visit to every member. That was done this fall in our capital campaign. And we won't be doing in-home gatherings as we've done in the past. Instead, we're going to be getting you information. You will be receiving letters and emails and newsletter articles and Facebook posts about the congregation's financial needs, what our budget is, and what we hope the pledging will be. It's kind of a risk, right? Because we're going to be sending out this information, and we are trusting that you will actually read the letters. In fact, I'm warning you ahead of time. We would love to see if we can reach a goal of $110,000 in pledges. It's about an 8% increase over our actual pledges last year. It's a risky goal. But I think all goals should be a little risky. They should ask you to stretch just that little bit. Some of you may be new to Unitarian Universalism and be wondering, what is this pledge thing? We are a self-sustaining congregation. For folks who have been raised in the Catholic tradition, they often find this surprising. What money we raise or have in the bank is the money that we have. There is no diocese that helps us. There is the larger Unitarian Universalist Association to which we give money, and they are there to help us with trainings and information and support. There are staff to help us if we get into difficulties or if you need to find a new minister. But we don't actually receive any money from them. What we raise is what we have. Your pledge is your promise as to what money you think you will be able to give to support this congregation. And why should you risk a pledge to this organization? Because we want to risk growth and transformation. We want to be able to pay our staff, not only so they are happy, but so that there are professionally trained folk here who lead us and help make sure that whatever we do is about welcome and about justice. We want to pay the heat bill so that when those folks we welcome show up, they are comfortable. We want to provide coffee for them, because when they come in, we'd like to be hospitable. We'd like to clear the parking lot enough so that we can offer space to both renters and community groups that support our mission and vision. We want to be able to be a place that people come for inspiration, for healing, for help. If you have been listening to the news, you have heard a lot about budgets lately. Budgets are always a reflection of our values. In a church, how we spend our money is a reflection of our values, and how we raise our money is a reflection of our values. So here is what I ask of you this year. Do not, for the love of all that is holy, do not pledge out of fear or obligation or peer pressure. If you choose to pledge to this place, do so because this place means something to you. Pledge out of love and hope and compassion. I talked to all of us earlier this morning about planting seeds. I don't tend to think gardeners and farmers are risk takers. I always think of them as folks who plan ahead, who don't move too fast, who wait for growth. But it has also been said, every farmer who plants a seed takes a risk. We work through faith that the good deeds we do are to put down roots. The roots are invisible, but they sustain plants that may not give fruit for a while. How lovely is this planting the seeds of love. And it is true, farmers do risk. You know, you put the seeds in the ground and you hope for the right amount of rain and sun and warmth, and if they don't grow, that's your year. Giving money to this organization is an act of trust and is a planting of a seed. Any act of trust is a risk we take. But let's take that risk, because if we do, if you do, then there is growth and transformation. I'd like to end with these words of Parker Palmer. In the human world, abundance does not happen automatically. It is created when we have the sense to choose community, to come together, to celebrate and share our common store. Whether the sacred resource is money or love or power or words, the true law of life is that we generate more of whatever seems scarce by trusting its supply and passing it around. Authentic abundance does not lie in the secured stockpiles of food or cash or influence or affection, but in belonging to a community where we can give those goods to others who need them and receive them from others when we are in need. In a world without end, may this be so.